Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm, the first cheesemaking co-op in Vermont. For more information, visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Cutting the Curd, and I'm Diane Stemple. It's my last show filling in for Ann Saxelby, who returns next week. It's been an exciting and fun-filled 3 months, talking cheese, interviewing cheese people, discussing cheese issues, serious and silly, and focusing on the dedication and quirkiness of cheese people on their various cheese paths. So today, I'm delighted to introduce Kate Arding.
Hello.
Hello, Kate. A respected member of the cheese community for, I think, over 20 years.
Yeah, and a quirky one. That's and a quirky last point.
I figured the British accent would be good too. Anyway, she is now known as one of the co-founders of Culture Magazine, which is really a most amazing magazine. It still feels new. It's a national cheese magazine, and it's known, among other things, for having a cheese centerfold which in every issue, which is very cool. And so, Kate, I wanted to interview a little bit about your cheese career, because that's what I've been focusing on with people.
How long have you got?
Well, we don't have that long. No. We don't have that long, but I'll coach you.
Oh, there we go.
Anyway, what did you study in school?
Oh, dear. That's not a good. Certainly not cheese.
Well,
not
nobody,
cheese.
Nobody did.
No, I know.
Nobody
I know.
Studied cheese.
So I'd always loved eating cheese, but mm-hmm. I didn't really come from a particularly sort of foodie family.
Oh, that was my next question.
No, well, not my immediate family, but I have an uncle who started a mustard making business, which is still going strong, and that was really how I got into the cheese business. But that's a little later, I guess.
Okay. So did you study in England or America?
I studied in England. Mm-hmm. And I came to the States 15 years ago, in 97.
Okay. What did you major in? Do you major in?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I didn't. I'm ashamed to say I actually got expelled from school.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I didn't ask you ahead of time.
That's okay. It's all right. I'd done my final exams.
What did you get expelled for?
Well, I'm not sure that we can put that
on
there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, there's no, nobody's listening, and there are no rules on this statement.
No, it wasn't actually as bad as I'm sure everybody's imagining right now, but I was...
the young Kate Arden.
I was the consummate practical joker, mm-hmm. and I went one practical joke too far and got caught, which was the big failing, because up until that time I got away with murder and nobody'd squealed on me.
Okay, and then they had to make an example out of you?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
And it was, but I was a little bit carefree at that point because I'd actually taken my final exams, and so it didn't actually matter.
Okay. How did your parents react to your being expelled?
Well, I'm not sure they really quite realised. I was sort of asked to leave early,
okay.
So I just sort of snuck off rather quietly.
Okay. Now, my next question is, what was your very first food job?
Well, actually, it was kind of funny because leading straight on from that, you know, I had this this vision in my head that I had a whole summer, extra long summer vacation ahead of me. And I got home from this, it was a boarding school, so I got home for the holidays. And much to my horror, found out that my mother had signed me up to work in this local hotel as a chambermaid.
Oh, no.
So bang goes my vision of a sort of leisurely summer holiday. And so I start off, as this chambermaid.
Oh, my goodness.
And,
I'd like to see, did you have to wear a uniform?
Diana.
I'd like to see pictures.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But I did find some really weird stuff in the bedrooms. I remember pulling back the bedclothes on one particular bed. Sorry, don't look too worried. And I'm finding a full life-size cutout of Margaret Thatcher. This being about 1984, it was a little bit surprising. Complete with handbag. So, but anyway, that's how I started off. And then in the space of about two or three weeks, and it was quite a nice hotel. It was quite a sort of grown-up, sort of what they call in England, a country house hotel. Mm-hmm. The breakfast chef walked out, and the owners came running up to me. I mean, I was 18. I didn't know anything about commercial cooking at all. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, how do you feel? You know, would you like to give it a go? And I thought, okay, you know. And I mean, the thing is about breakfast in England, it's not just sort of bacon and eggs. It's sort of kippers and kedgeree mm-hmm. and, I mean, all this stuff. I mean, and I was like looking through all my mum's recipe books thinking, oh, my God, how do I make this? But somehow I pulled it off and nobody got food poisoning. So, yeah, that was my first introduction, a rather chaotic one, uh-huh. I'm sure. But
to the food world.
Yeah.
How long did you last?
The summer. No, okay. I end up going to college in the fall. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I did it for the whole summer.
Okay.
So it was good, yeah.
So tell me the story of how you fell in love with cheese.
Well, it sort of was a gradual process.
Okay.
My very first job was, my first grown-up job was working for the National Trust in England. And my boss at the time, who became a great friend of mine, was a wonderful cook. And she was always having these rather grown-up dinner parties. And I was pretty young, you know, and we became great friends. And in the lunch hour, she would go shopping for these for food, for these dinner parties. And she introduced me to this cheese shop in Kensington, in London.
Which was called
Jeroboam's. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was owned and run by Juliet Harbord, who's
a well-known
figure. And I remember going in there, you know, with my friend and just seeing all these cheeses on straw mats and thinking, oh, my God, this is amazing, you know. And I'd never seen anything like it. And just the smell and the whole thing was just so seductive. And I didn't know anything about
it. Were they mostly European at that point?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of French cheeses. And, you know, I'd buy my little sort of wedge of brie or pavé d'affinoir and thought mm-hmm. I was being frightfully sophisticated, you know. And then I would go back in there and the following week or whenever, and I'd say, that cheese I had last week was amazing, you know. What can you recommend? And then Juliet, who can be quite scary, mm-hmm. even, I mean, we're still friends, you know, she could be quite frightening at times, would ask me to describe, you know, what I'd
what
had.
What you liked
yeah.
before.
And I said, well, it was just kind of yellow and had a white rind, you know. She said, no, what did it taste like? And of course, I didn't have a clue how to describe flavor. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, not many people do, you know, where they're just shopping for cheese. And it was actually one of the best lessons I ever had, you know, because because I was frightened of her, and mm-hmm. yes, I really wanted to get this cheese, mm-hmm. it made me kind of think about what I was tasting in a slightly more analytical way.
So she was a really good cheesemonger.
She was.
Even though she was a little intimidating.
She was. I mean, I've talked about it with her subsequently, you know, mm-hmm. much later, and she said, well, you know, I was out in her New Zealand accent. She said, you know, I only asked you that because I couldn't remember what you'd bought the week before, which, of course, now I totally can relate to, but at the time, she
right.
put the fear of God into me. So that right. was the first introduction to proper mm-hmm. cheese, as it were.
So when did you switch to working in cheese?
Well, I was, as I say, in the art world for a number of years, and through a long-winded series of events, which would take all night to relate to you, I ended up actually in New York mm-hmm. on a special project that took about a year, which was a finite
contract.
Was
that your first time living in America?
Yes, and mm-hmm. I was just so seduced by it. So I remember coming in from JFK and mm-hmm. seeing the steaming manhole covers and the signs saying, don't walk. It was just like starring in your own movie. It was fantastic. And
what year was that?
89.
Okay.
89, 90. But it was a fixed-term contract, so mm-hmm. and I was all gung-ho to stay and had even lined up jobs and stuff, but which then didn't come off. But so, to make a long story short, I ended up going back to England, and I wasn't ready for it at all. You know, I was completely...
You didn't have a job lined up?
No, I mm-hmm. mean, I was 24, and I thought I knew it all, you mm-hmm. know? And so suddenly I was living at home again with Mum and Dad. And my cousin, my first cousin, who went into the mustard making business after his father, mm-hmm. Called me up and said, well, how do you want to help us out for 6 months? And I thought, great, you know, because mm-hmm. I'd actually always really admired what they were doing, mm-hmm. but they'd been too small to really hire anybody else. And his wife was actually on maternity leave. So I went and helped out and actually ended up staying about 3.5 years and developing the sort of sales and marketing side and deliveries and filling mustard pots with
so kind of learning a food business from the ground up.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I just loved it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved it. And one of the places I delivered to, because I used to love doing the London run.
I bet I can guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Neil's Yard Dairy.
Right. And I just walked in there and it was just like...
Was that when it was in Covent Garden?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was like nothing else I'd ever seen. I mean, there were definitely high-end food stores mm-hmm. around, but this was 1992, mm-hmm. 91, 92. And the thing that struck me so immediately about Neil's Yard as opposed to other places was as a customer or just as a visitor, you immediately felt drawn in. You know, whereas in other shops, I mean, you could get very high quality food, but
they're not so welcoming.
Not so welcoming, mm-hmm. and there was that sort of snobby mm-hmm. kind of approach. And it was very seductive. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of, so yeah, I ended up eventually going to work there.
Mm-hmm. And what did you do first for Neil's Yard?
Oh, well, I was very clear. It was a funny thing, because I've been delivering to a lot of restaurants and places for the mustard business, mm-hmm. Tracklemans is called. I'd sort of got a very keen interest in the restaurant side, so I was quite clear that I wanted to work on the wholesale side of at the dairy. And as luck would have it, they were looking for someone. And funnily enough, my uncle,
the mustard uncle,
William. And Randolph Hodgson of Neil's Yard had collaborated on sharing a shipping container to export stuff to the States.
Oh, great.
And in fact, my first memory of Randolph was actually coming down to the mustard making factory, which was tiny. It was mm-hmm. in an old bakery mm-hmm. at the time in the middle of Wiltshire. And I literally lived above it in what had been the old flour loft. Converted, I hate that. And I remember coming, hearing this knock on the front door. It was on a Saturday morning, and I was still in my pajamas. And there was Randolph standing at the bottom of the stairs.
To meet with your uncle.
Yes, to meet with him. He obviously got lost. And that was the very first time we met. So who would have thunk it years later? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Okay, so how many different cheese jobs have you had?
Well, not that many. I think mm-hmm. people have this impression I bounce around a lot. But actually, I was at Neil's Yard for, between 93 and 97.
Okay.
And then I moved to California to help Sue Conley and Peggy Smith start Cowgirl.
Which was modeled after
Neil's Yard, largely. Mm-hmm. And so that was 97 to 2004. Mm-hmm. And then I did sort of break out a little bit.
You took a break.
I did take a break and I went off. I'd sort of...
Into Africa?
I did. It was a little bit...
That's when I met you. Yes. You were on your way to Africa.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And what did you do in Africa?
Well, I got involved in this project with a friend of mine who's a veterinarian there, large animal veterinarian. And she was working in a very remote part of northeastern Uganda mm-hmm. and with this warrior tribe called mm-hmm. the Karamojong. Mm-hmm. And I went out to visit her and I was completely hooked. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just so sort of seductive. I keep using that word today. But anyway, it was very, very seductive. Talk about one extreme to the other. I mean, the contrast from the Bay Area to northeastern Uganda was quite extreme.
<I'm> sure.
But I was sort of ready for it. You know,
first you went for a visit and then you came back?
I went for a visit and I was really struck by everything. Mm-hmm. I'd never been to Africa before. Mm-hmm. And I mean, people say that it does that to you and, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of pulls you in, and it absolutely did for me. And so what I did was I then had to figure out a way of how to get back there. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was going through the whole green card process, which was hell on wheels. Mm-hmm. And so, ironically, I was only allowed to be out of the country for 90 days at a time. Mm-hmm. So what happened was a friend of mine, who was actually a former cheesemaker at Cowgirl, who'd done a lot of work in Tanzania, said, or suggested to me, he said, you know, you need to get in touch with Land O'Lakes, mm-hmm. you know, the big butter people. Mm-hmm. And I said, really? You know, he said, yes, because they have this phenomenal international dairy development arm. And I said, you know, I had no idea. And they, mm-hmm. I don't understand it because they don't publicize it mm-hmm. at all. And anyway, so this, I sort of went online and started looking. And of course, they had all these forms to fill out, which, of course, I didn't fit any of the criteria because mm-hmm. I hadn't majored in anything, to your earlier point. And so I just said, I decided to take the bull by the horns, and I just called their office in Uganda. And I said, I'm really sorry to bother you. You have no idea who I am, but this is...
I want to come and work with you,
and mm-hmm. I'll volunteer my my expertise, such as I had, you know, for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or however long you want, if you can cover airfare and board and lodging. Because as you can imagine, the airfare from San Francisco to Entebbe Africa. Is not inexpensive,
right,
especially
right.
if you're commuting every 3 months. So they were a bit surprised, not, you know, and then they said, okay, you know, we'll do it. And so what I would do is go out and work with them for about 3 or 4 weeks, primarily in southern part of the country and the southwest, which is actually incredibly rich and lush, and it's the area where the gorillas, as in GORILLAS, mm-hmm. Are. It's very fertile, and there's a lot of dairying down mm-hmm. there. So I'd go and help them on various projects there, and then I'd, you know, once that was done, I would go up country and go and help out this friend of mine, you know, in the northeast. It was really an amazing interlude. And I did that for about 2 years.
Well, so. It's time for us to take a break. So since we've heard about your break from cheese, we'll take a break, and we'll be back with Cutting the Curd.
You're listening to This Body by Pamela Royal on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
We'd like to send a special thank you to our latest business member, Consider Bardwell. 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheesemaking co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. A century later, Angela Miller, Russell Glover, and Chris Gray are revitalizing the tradition. Their cheeses are made by hand in small batches from whole, fresh milk that is antibiotic and hormone-free. Only microbial rennet is used in their cheesemaking. All cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves. For more information or to purchase cheese, visit ConsiderBardwellFarm.com. To learn more about becoming a business member, email us, info@heritageradionetwork.org. We all know what a foodie is, but what's foodiness?
Foodiness is turning us into those chubby, slushy, slurping, lounge chair-bound morons in WALL-E, plugged in, pumped full of sugar, and brain dead.
Chef Erica Wides is here to fight against foodiness.
You have to keep drinking the Let's Get Real Kool-Aid for it to start to work.
Let's Get Real. Rediscover real food every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, it's Diane Stemple, Cutting the Curd with Kate Arding from Culture Magazine, and we're discussing her career. And now I want to ask her some questions. The first of which is, isn't it dreamy working for Culture Magazine?
It is.
It is.
It's really, it's been a blast.
And it seems like everyone loves the magazine. I mean, is that just cheese people, or do you get good reviews from consumers?
Well, I think it's equally read by the trade and the consumer, mm-hmm. which was, I mean, it wasn't our original intention, actually. I mean, the vision is very much that it's a consumer publication.
Right, that's what I thought.
But when we were sort of sitting around in the sort of drunken wee small hours of trying to formulate the company, which is really how it started.
And what year was it being?
2007.
Okay.
And we thought, well, if we do a consumer publication, the chances are, and we do it hopefully well, you know, the mm-hmm. chances are it'll be read by the trade.
Right.
But if we do a trade publication, it'll never be read by the consumer, right. Or rarely.
That makes sense. So it won't be in the right places to be purchased.
And it's just a different, you know, tempo and sort of mm-hmm. style altogether. So, you know, we've been so lucky, and it's really such a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing to think we're in our fifth year mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember going around sort of the ACS, the American Cheese Society conference in the summer of 2008 with this little flimsy prototype. And, uh-huh. and we were so excited and showing it to everybody, and they were reaction, well, that's nice. Good luck with that, you know. And it's somehow here we are. But it's been so...
So you were worried at first, how would it be received?
Well, we weren't really that worried. We just did it.
Uh-huh,
I think,
okay.
And, I mean, we probably should have been worried.
Uh-huh.
And I think, of course, what did happen between that summer, 2008, and the launch of our first issue, which was December 2008, mm-hmm. was the kind of world fell apart. And in that sort of interim...
The economy tanked.
Yeah, it really tanked. And a lot of people, not without reason, said, you know, if you continue with this idea, you're absolutely nuts.
It's a terrible time to start anything.
It's a terrible time to start anything, and especially in publishing. And we said, yes, we know.
Well, but...
and
but,
we went ahead anyway.
Right, but you're there. I mean, what were you going to do, just abandon ship?
Well, and it's a huge testament to the people who've pulled it together. And mm-hmm. really, up until very recently, we've been a very, very small... Well, we still are a small team, but we mm-hmm. were a tiny team.
Mm-hmm.
And also the support of an enormous number of people in the mm-hmm. industry. I mean, there's no way we could have done it without
right.
that. So it's... But in the process, you know, we've learned a huge amount. I mean, mm-hmm. I've learned a massive amount. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember the sort of... early meetings, and I was sort of saying things like, well, I think we should do an article on alpine cheeses, and everybody is saying, well, what's an alpine cheese, you know? And that
were you the cheese expert on
yes.
the committee?
Well, yes, and that was but you know what, it taught me so much, because uh-huh. it was really useful, because it made me start to understand things from a consumer standpoint again,
right.
having been very much obviously on the trade side. So it's been enormously enlightening. I mean, truly every issue I learn something.
It's a very lush magazine. I mean, it's so... I just was looking at the recent issue and was drooling again, well, even though I've already looked at it.
Well, you're very kind.
I think everyone loves it.
Well, it's really, as I say, it's been really fun and continues to be fun. And now we're sort of getting to the next level in terms of developing the website even more. We have a wonderful new web editor, Amy Sherman, and we have a sort of nearly full-time social media person, Rebecca, and they've just been
I have noticed a lot of culture on my Facebook.
Well, it's that fantastic thing, you know, because here we are, all these sort of old fogies or middle-aged fogies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I speak for myself. And both Rebecca and Amy are 20-somethings, and the productivity has gone through the roof.
Right, you need that age group. Really, you need that age group.
So it's been a great shot in the arm for all of us.
So how do you know how many people buy it versus how many can you just get it online now?
We haven't got to the point yet where you put the magazine online, because I think we're not against that. I mean, we're definitely looking at doing that through sort of the iPad sort of thing.
And it seems like a lot of magazines have just recently been offering both.
They have, and we're definitely open to that. We're looking at that very closely. We're also looking at apps. But in the same breath, because we're quarterly and we also have this print publication, a lot of the feedback we get, especially from people like myself who's, you know, over 35 years old, is that they still really favor the print thing. And there's a lot of anticipation about their copy arriving every quarter, and they sort of put aside, you know, a couple of hours on a Sunday morning just to read it, which is fantastic. But that said, you know, we're also acutely aware that, of course, there are a whole slew of younger people out there who are actually getting and wanting to get their information in a completely different way.
Right.
So, yes, we're very much moving towards that right now. But we have to be careful that one doesn't cannibalize the other.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a balance. Right. We'll
because
figure it
the
out.
Articles and the pictures will be different when they're online. I mean, online pictures are great, but you might not see them all.
Exactly. But then I think in the same breath, you know, there's a lot of stuff that the web and that sort of side of things lends itself to that you can't actually reproduce in the magazine, like video, for example. So what we've done right now is we're developing and have developed a very robust companion website, which has a lot of ancillary information which relates to the content of the magazine, and a lot more above and beyond that.
So you can go more in depth.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, can you tell me how the centerfold idea came about?
That was my idea.
I thought I remembered that. And was it?
I don't know what it says about my my state of mind.
But how many issues have there been, also?
Well, the first issue was December 2008.
And what cheese was in that centerfold?
Winnemere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go Winnemere, Jasper
very,
Hill.
Very exactly. That big sort of oozy,
sexy cheese.
Exactly. And
you've had a centerfold every other issue.
We have.
And
we have.
It was your idea?
Yes. I mean, we all agreed on it. You know, it was just sort of, again, it's amazing what can the it's creative
a, it was
juices.
A phenomenal idea.
Well, yeah,
it's very visual cheese.
It is, and of course, the only thing that we found is that the inevitably the sort of oozy soft ones tend to have a bit more kind of cheese appeal, if I can put it that way,
than the
firmer ones. Yeah, exactly. But
as opposed to other things,
yeah, we won't go there. Yeah, but they're still. It's a wonderful opportunity to do a sort of big splash on one cheese.
Yeah. And how often is it American versus European?
We try to actually, it's a really good question, because I think one of the things that probably a lot of people don't realize is the amount of planning that goes into not just each issue, but also across, you know, 6 or 8 issues, because we actually have a giant matrix, if you like, and we plot everything out in
trying
advance.
To balance.
Exactly. So geography is a huge one. Cow, sheep, goat.
Right. As it should be.
Even the gender of the cheesemaker.
Okay.
The scale of the operation, you know, large versus small.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, inadvertently.
You want to be fair.
Absolutely. And it's really important to represent. I mean, there's a lot of different, as you know better than anyone, a lot of different people in the industry. And, you know, some of the good stories. I mean, of course, inevitably one thinks all the best stories, in inverted commas, come from smaller scale producers, but that's not the case actually at all. There's some great stories from larger scale guys and some really good stuff going on, which doesn't get sort of shouted about often enough. So it's been fascinating. As I said earlier, I've learned so much. It's really helped to get me out of my little kind of narrow rut, as it were. It's been a very good good exercise.
It seems like a great job. And the magazine is doing a great job of presenting the cheese industry and the cheese community really well.
Well, thank you so much. I mean the way I refer to it is the sort of megaphone for the industry, actually, mm-hmm. because there's some really fabulous stuff going on within the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very symbiotic relationship. You know, I mean, if it's just, we're just telling the story of what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. You know. And do you every year have the American Cheese Society Awards, or is that new?
No, we've done that the last 3 years okay. now. And in fact, this year, 2013, we're actually going to an insert in every issue. And then we're also having a standalone extra issue.
Oh, great.
Which is going to be appearing later on in the year, which is going to be a roundup of kind of the world's best cheeses. So I hope I haven't blown it by saying that. But anyway, nobody's listening, right?
Nobody's listening. No.
So yeah, we're really kind of ramping it up, and this upcoming spring issue is going to have a whole chef insert.
Okay. Okay. Lastly, I want to just say this is my last show on Cutting the Curd, and I want to thank Anne Saxelby for giving me this great opportunity to host Cutting the Curd for 3 months. And I want to thank the people at Heritage Radio Network who have been so helpful and welcoming and supportive. Joe Galarraga, my engineer, who's waving at me from the next room to stop talking. And Aaron Fairbanks, the executive director. And Jack Inslee, the executive producer. And I also want to thank all my guests who have been so enthusiastic to join me on the show. And Roberta's, who has fed us great food afterwards. And I want to thank you, Kate Arding, for being my last guest and for being so accommodating to drive down in the snow to be here.
Well, I'm very honored. And you've done a wonderful job over the last few weeks, too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And it's Cutting the Curd on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.